So, dear friends, as you know, every summer we take up the study of a mystic saintly text on Tuesdays. And last year we took up this great book, a great guide to practical and intense spiritual life. And we did not complete the book. In fact, out of the 75 chapters, we did only 7 chapters. And so I decided to continue with the same wonderful treatise. I had been reading this book for several years and found immense inspiration and a very useful practical guidance in leading the life towards this ultimate goal. Let us begin by looking at this. You know, here beginneth, that is how the author describes this goal. Here beginneth a book of contemplation, the which is called the cloud of unknowing, in the which is a soul is one with God. This is archaic English, of course, but some of the wordings are very interesting, which one does not find in the modern English. And that is, the soul is one with God. One is a noun, that is, we don't use it as a verb. So here it is used as a verb. The soul is one with God. And so this whole exercise is to become one with God. Also, it indicates that it is not the becoming really. It is the awareness of the existing oneness with God. We are divine. And it is only this cloud of unknowing, which is very akin to what is called in Vedanta as Maya. That Maya is synonymous with what he calls here the cloud of unknowing. And it is very interesting that in Vedanta there is an elaborate philosophy and concept has been developed in the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita and the various commentaries of great sages about this cloud of unknowing or Maya. In Christianity, that idea is not very much emphasized. It is in this mystic text you find this thing mentioned, and not only mentioned, elaborated and shown as the cause of our fictitious separation from divine. We are divine. It is only the ignorance that is making us see I as separate from the world, I as separate from you, everything is thus becoming confusing, and this confusion, this basic confusion enters in all aspects of our life, our thinking, our feeling, our actions. Everything is permeated by this initial big mistake. And unless that is corrected, the problems that we are facing will not go. And therefore, we have to see that this is the idea of becoming one with God. Let us begin with the prayers. God, please recite. God, unto whom all hearts be open, and unto whom all will speaketh, and unto whom no privy thing is hid, I beseech thee so far to cleanse the intent of mine heart with the unspeakable gift of thy grace, that I may perfectly love thee and worthily praise thee. Amen. This was also the prayer, the Vedic prayer with which we began the class, Vang me manasi pratishthita, that may my mind and speech and actions, let they have perfect correspondence. The intent must be true. So, this is the intent behind this search. And this book is not meant to be a popular book. Never expect this book to become a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, or this bestseller, or that's best. No, this book is not meant for that at all. In the beginning of the book, the author mentions, and the author has not put his name. For whatever reasons, we don't know the name. Only we know that it is some British mystic, a monk, who has given these teachings to a novice who wants to again pursue this path of divine unification. So, for that purpose, he says that, see, people are, almost all human beings are religious. Even though some may call themselves as atheists, but then that particular atheism kind of becomes a religion, that becomes a god. Have you heard? It is you won't believe, but that is the reality, that there are atheist churches. The atheist organizations, which also hold their services. So it is very much like a religion. So it is, and they also speak of God that does not exist. But for that also they have to talk about God, you see. God that does not exist. So it is, human beings are mostly religious. You cannot banish religion from human life. These attempts have always failed. And therefore, while accepting the fact that most human beings are religious, there comes this question that what kind of religion do we follow? Mostly it is seen that the religion that is followed is of a social type. Although we perforce accept the presence of God, yet we want that God to just keep on continuing us in the state of happiness and connected with all our family members, our attachments should kind of continue. That is how the religion that one follows. It is religion of socialization, religion centered on eating good food. Ask anybody, what do we practice in religion? I get these many times when in interfaith meetings, or sometimes when I go to different schools to give ideas about Hinduism. The question is, what type of festivities are there, and what nice things are prepared for eating, what kind of parties are thrown. So that is, there all religions have the harmony in a way, you know, that it is. Because human beings do not normally see anything beyond this apparent, evanescent, changing phenomena that we call living. Then this is the primary stage. Then he says, perchance somebody starts thinking that, well, let me think more about God. This world is certainly a vanishing thing. All the attachments that I have, they eventually bring suffering. And I feel that everything that I hanker after creates a bondage. So what is the reality? What is the truth? One gets, you know, that idea that to find out God, and then that is the superior variety, a special. He calls that a special. The ordinary religious people, special religious people, their number is not much. Then amongst these special, some understand that God is the most valuable thing in life and are therefore ready to pay the price for it. Others think, yes, God is important, but other things are more important, or at least for now. Like the joke, one priest said that, well, all of you, I am sure, want to go to heaven. How many of you want to go to heaven? Please raise your hands. And hardly any hand got raised, you know. No hand. So he was surprised why nobody is going to heaven. And he asked, why you are not, nobody wants to go to heaven? And then the parishioner said, eventually we of course want to. We thought that you are asking right now. Right now. What happened?
Feedback.
Where from did it come?
Right now. I guess you got excited.
No, I was not talking in the back though. Anyway.
You had raised the volume a little bit higher.
Okay. Are you able to hear? That was not going to heaven, you know, what you just heard. And then the parishioner said, right now we have many other things to do. I am thinking that after the service, where shall I go to dine? You know, that is the primary thought right now. Afterwards, I will think about the going to heaven and all that. So, we also give this secondary importance to God realization. Other things are more important in life, and thus we do not pay the price, for God is great. God is the greatest. But if you really feel that, if one really feels that God is the most important thing, then we will get God at whatever may be the asking price. No negotiation will be entertained there. Yes, this is the price, take it. And the price here to be paid is really very simple. Very easy to pay. That which anyway is going to be taken away from you, that alone is being asked to be paid as price. Anyway, everything else is going away. So a wise person should, okay, take it. That it is anyway going to be taken away. What does it matter? Take it away right now and let me have God, the reality, the truth. It appears very simple, but because of this ignorance, this thought doesn't enter. No, God realization, later on we will see about it. Now, these are other important things. So such people are not going to be subject of discussion here, for the book is not meant for them. The book is meant for those who are ready to pay the price. And that is the meaning that you value it more. And suppose Anshu goes to buy, say, in the shop at Unique, and then she likes one, and if she sees the price tag, $300, she may think it is too much, $300 for this simple thing. No, I don't think I should buy this tunic, because $300 are more valuable than the tunic. Then she finds a nice one too, but the price is given only $25. She immediately takes out $25, gets the tunic, because there the $25 are not as valuable as the tunic. So it is like that. That is the world more valuable or God is more valuable? If we see God is more valuable, we will be ready to give up all our attachments to the world. It is so simple, really speaking. And when one comes to that stage, this author calls them singular. And then the fourth stage is, well, when the price is actually paid. Here it is not credit thing, you know, no credit card, okay, or I will pay later, not things like that. It is only after you pay, then it is delivered to you. Not like taking house on mortgage, that you get the possession, but it is not yours, it still belongs to bank. So, this is, you won't get the possession of it unless a full payment is made, or to the extent you make payment, to that extent you will get the presence of God. So the presence of God is then you, that is the fourth stage, the stage of perfection. It is the stage of divine life filled with the constant awareness of God, like life of Sri Ramakrishna, constantly filled with awareness of God alone is real. In Sri Ramakrishna's life, one can palpably see this, that he was seeing nothing else as having any value. God alone was real. So this is the fourth stage. So but the book is directed to those who are in the third stage, the singular, means they have understood that God is most valuable, and the world is anyway going to go away. I will never be able to catch the world. Can I catch the world? It is just a shadow continuously going away. Then try to catch it, it slips away. And yet one keeps on making that silly attempt to do it. So therefore, we don't get ready to give it up. So this book is for those who have now decided that no, and God is the most important thing. All other things, the property, money, relations, our social prestige and positions and all that, all our pride about learning and so forth, it is really not worthy of keeping. It is going to go away, and while it is there, it still is really causing the bondage and the hurt that arises from it. And therefore, this person becomes ready to give it up. When, suppose, you are holding on to red hot iron and the hand is burning, but you don't know what the cause of the burning is, and you feel that the hot iron is to be held on to, that is so good. So at that time, one does not spontaneously give up that hot iron. When you know that that is the cause, you immediately drop it, and then the burning stops. So similarly, this world, it is a terribly scorching thing, but we feel somehow it is so dear, it is so beautiful, it is so nice, and so we are not ready to see it as it truly is. It is truly God. So those who feel it are ready to give it up, because they know that this is the truth is truth, and also that truth is bliss. It is, although there is the saying, ignorance is bliss, one should not take it too literally. I mean, ignorance is not bliss. It is that is the bliss of the fool's paradise. It is not really bliss. So we feel that this universe is so full of bliss, and we don't give it up. So for those who are ready to give it up, this is the guidance, you know, those who are sincere about it. He says those who are not at singular stage, but are sincerely feeling about it, and they also can read the book, although that reading will be helpful to them only to come to this decision that God alone is the reality, to firm up this conviction. We had seen last year many in the, there were 8 classes last year on these 7 chapters. So I will not really be able to give the full summary. Otherwise, that again will take this year's classes as well. But those lectures are available on our website to be heard. So you can listen to them, and we will just take a brief this thing, overview of what we did in the last of the last year's class. And an interesting concept was developed there. First, let us see about this book, a very good commentator mentions Elvin Underhill. A great simplicity characterizes his doctrine of the soul's attainment of the absolute. For him, there is but one central necessity, the perfect and passionate setting of the will upon the divine. not by deliberate ascetic practices, not by refusal of the world, not by intellectual striving, but by actively loving and choosing, does the spirit of man achieve its goal. So, this is the nature of this book, that actively direct all love to God and God alone. All other things are reflection, you see, of God. So, to turn attention to God is to turn attention to reality. And now, it is to be done how he says, lift up your heart to God with a meek stirring of love. Do not ask too much about God. God who made you, God who is my reality. Do not go into any deep philosophical ratiocinating, hair-splitting logic, and that God who is the reality, who made me, this is sufficient. Do not say anything more about God. Do not, we don't need to keep on, you know, saying about God. We do not know and we keep on talking about it. Sri Ramakrishna says that one man was telling something about God. It is like a statement. He was telling something terribly wrong. So Sri Ramakrishna says, this is like a person telling, in my uncle's cow shed there are 100 horses. Now that means there are no horses. Horses are not kept in cow shed, you know. So yeah, there are no horses. It is in cow shed, you don't keep horses in cow shed. And then another person, devotee, remarked, and then there are no cows also, because he didn't say about cows. So it is neither cows nor horses. So God who is the truth, God who is my reality, God who made me, that's enough. The practicality is now to direct all attention on God. And here he has given the concept, what is called in Hinduism or Buddhism, the idea mantra, and that it is actually, even that concept is not necessary, no harm in having it though. A naked intent directed to God is sufficient. And then there is this mantra for concentration and for better expression and grasp. Shortest word or one syllable, this will be the shield and the spear. Shield and the spear. This is a very beautiful analogy. The mantra or the one syllable that you choose, that represents the God for you. God and that syllable is one and the same. They are identical. It is the shield and the spear. That is the beautiful expression he has used. When you imagine a battle situation and a warrior goes in the olden times, now two things are taken. One is shield. A shield is for what? Shield of defense. Yeah, exactly. Shield is for defense, and spear is for offense, to forge ahead, to get rid of the enemies. You use the spear. So this mantra, this name of God and this one word that is to be repeated with more and more intensity and the focus on the divine, that will protect us from all other thoughts that keep on attacking, and they will be coming at us. But when this mantra then is used as a shield, when that happens, the mantra becomes the shield that you keep on doing. I remember one very nice technique, and that works very well even in the external way, that at one of our centers, I used to be there, it was right on the highway, and lot of trucks going on. Then there was a rail line also around, so a busy rail line, constant noise. So I was wondering, well, how can you keep on the concentration on your mantra? You start repeating mantra, and then suddenly a big bang, and like what we had here, you know, a little while ago. So it is. Then how can you maintain that concentration? The mantra can become a shield. There is just as there is a volume knob on this, you know. So you have a volume knob. When the mantra is being recited inside, you can increase the mental volume. Mental volume. And then inside, it starts really sounding very loud, louder than all other noises that are coming in. So mantra starts ringing in your heart, so loudly that no other voice will come into you, no other noise will penetrate into you. So one can increase that volume. It is also a shield at the thought level. When it is an advice you will find many meditators have given, a very beautiful advice, that if one is being attacked by many types of not so spiritual ideas, many other attractions in the world are hitting on the mind, then the mantra becomes a wonderful shield. Repeat the mantra, repeat that one syllable, and then as that syllable is repeated, the effect of these will go away. In among the Hindus, there is this nice saying, the name of Rama will drive away all the demons, you know. All demons, they run away with repetition of the name of Rama. The same idea here, it works as a shield. And then the spear. A spear means it is, you are not there just only to sit and keep on defending. You have to go beyond, conquer the territory occupied by the enemy. So you have to retake it. So you have to forge ahead and go on hitting on this cloud of unknowing with this word symbol, the mantra. Go on hitting on it. And as you hit on it, you will see gradually, because of the love, the understanding starts developing. It is this again and again hitting on this cloud of unknowing with this mantra, this syllable, which is God, which is same as God. It is for all purposes the name, and the one that is named, they are identical. It is like if I say, utter the word carol. Then what happens? The carol's face comes before me. Then what happens? Then somebody, what that carol is, all the qualities also start coming before me. All other things also about her. The whole file basically opens up just by the name that you just in the computers as you do, click on the file name and the file, maybe a big file, but it opens. So that name is identical with all the information that it has. It is, the whole book is there. So, and the God's name, the one syllable is identical actually with God. The syllable is God. And there is no difference between them. There is in the devotional scriptures in Vedanta, this point is again and again made very clear. Nam Nami Abheda. In Sanskrit it says like that. Nam Nami Abheda means the name and the bearer of the name. There is no difference between them. So, it is. And it further says, the mind will start in its exercise. And really not, it is a bad exercise to find out ways to get scattered. The name is trying to make it focused. But then, the other ideas, well, what is this God, what is this name, and where from it comes, which author says what about it, and then we lose the focus. What are different explanations about it? No other explanation or deciphering is to be indulged in. The mantra is a complete whole. That's it. I had told this earlier last year, but when I got my mantra from my guru, I was stupid enough to ask my great teacher the meaning of the mantra. That what does it mean? You means there is two words, and what does it mean? And he laughed and said, well, keep on repeating it, and that is the meaning of it. What comes as the result of repeating it, that is the meaning of it. It is like I take somebody's name, say Heidi. And what is the meaning of Heidi? Well, if I repeat the name Heidi, then Heidi will come, and that is the meaning of it. So it is like that. There is no other meaning that can be expressed in words. You can tell a few things, but that is again a very hazy and at times misleading explanation. So, and this teacher is cautioning here from that it is whole, complete. Just repeat the mantra. Repeat, that is the meaning of it. It is like you get a seed. Now the meaning of the seed is really the tree. But you don't see it now, and even if you keep on talking about it, you won't get it. You have to sow the seed, cultivate it, take good care of it, and then from the seed, Uma, what will come out from the seed? From the seed, what comes out? Tree. Tree. So, the meaning of the seed is actually the tree, if cultivated. So, the mantra is really the God. But you have to cultivate that. Do meditations, do repetition with more and more love pouring about God. And with that love, when the mantra is repeated, the meaning flashes. So, this is, we will read a little bit from the book itself. This is a very funny idea, sounds very funny. This is told at this stage where the aspirant has no so-called, you know, what is called evil intent, absolutely not there. That is why there is this divine love and spiritual practices, they can go on. But you know, good and evil, they are relative. Even something that is very good in the sense it helped you at one time can become an obstacle, and therefore in spiritual life can become actually evil. And the mind gets attached to that, thinking that it is good because it helped you. So, because it helped you, you got attached to it. And now what happened? Because of attachment, now you are not able to go ahead. And so that very thing now became evil. Suppose, say from here, you want to go to Florida, you took the flight, and then you are thinking, oh, how nice this aircraft, it is so helpful, because of this aircraft I was able to go to Florida, wonderful, I love this flight. And then after it lands, because of your love for the aircraft, you refuse to get down. Then that which helped you becomes an obstacle. Now come on, get out. Otherwise, you will not be able to actually be in Florida. The aircraft will fly back. You will be then going back from where you started. So therefore, this is very, very important, friends, to understand this relativity of good and evil. It is not easy to actually explain it to the Western mind, because there is this dividing line comes, you know, if you are good or if you are bad, just tell, good or bad. It is a relative thing. Something is good for one, not that it is good for everyone. Something is good for A at one stage. For the same person at another stage, it becomes bad. It is not that it is good means it is good for all the people, all the time. It is good in only a given context. And something is evil, and not always and for all people. It is evil in a given context. Beyond that, it is not evil either. This tendency to divide things permanently between good and evil, that itself is probably a permanently evil thing. It is to keep on dividing, good means it is permanently good. No. So let us think about this, that it is, he had mentioned that, therefore bind yourself to him by love and by belief and by virtue of the knot that binds you, you shall perceive together with him, that is Lord, and with all who are likewise bound to him by love. That is to say, with Our Lady Saint Mary, who possess the highest grace in the keeping of time, and with all the saints in heaven and all earth who, by the grace of Jesus, take heed of time properly in return in terms of love. It is, do not take Jesus and Mary necessarily as persons. It is the embodiment of these great principles in life, that it is Jesus as the manifestation of God in human form. So, God appearing in flesh and blood. That is how you have to, one has to understand that. And love for Jesus, we had discussed this earlier, I am not going to have time to repeat all that, but with this, what happens in this lies true consolation. Understand what is worthwhile. You must be warned, however, of one thing more than all other. No one can truly claim community with Jesus and His good mother, His high angels and His saints, if He is not a person who does everything He can, making use of time with the help of grace. He will then be seen to be one who uses his time to advantage in improving himself and making his contribution to the community as much as that may be on the same term as each of the others offers of himself. So this here, the community means the community of devotees, community of those who are God's people. Again, let me refer to Narada's aphorisms on devotion. Narada mentions that tasmin tasjane bheda bhavat, that God and his apostles, his these prophets, they cannot be separated from each other. So, and this is, they are one and the same. So this is to be, and how can we be part of that community? By using our time. This concept also he had discussed earlier, that using our time for this purpose. I am not going to go into the details again, because we had discussed these ideas earlier, that making full use of the time available to us for this purpose. And then he says, pay attention to this work, therefore, and to its marvelous ways within your soul. This is the work to be accomplished, and so pay attention to it. He calls this the only work. The work means what? That which is done with a purpose, an activity which is to accomplish a purpose, that gets called work. What work had you been doing? I was sitting on the chair and dozing. Will you call that work? No, it was not work. It is, work is to achieve an objective, an activity taken up to achieve an end. That gets called work. And this work of realizing our true nature is the objective. Our divine self is to be realized. And let us use all available time to that end. Thus, we feel that we are doing our part in the divine grace. And then the divine grace makes this progress go on. This he mentions that this is that, and the other part, you know, that now you may ask me, he starts this question, now you may ask me, what is he that thus presses upon me in this work? Is it a good thing or an evil thing? And if it is an evil thing, must we not wonder at the fact that he increases man's devotion so much? That it is about all this idea of thinking different aspects of God, thinking of the mercy of God, thinking about or praising all the different things, that miracles that God has performed, and so forth. It is, and it appears to be very good for a devotional exercise. It does appear to be indeed very beneficial, and that is where a note of caution is being given, that yes, it all appears to be very good, and it does have its advantages, but there is a very fine line where the advantage ends and where the other things, means disadvantages, start coming. And the same example I gave, you know, that it is an advantage that the aircraft, you got to sit in the aircraft, but if you get attached to it, then that is not an advantage, then you will not be able to actually go where you are willing to go. So same thing happens here too. For sometimes it seems to me to be exceedingly pleasant to listen to his tales. One moment he makes me weep with the fullest pity of my heart for the passion of Christ, and another moment for my own wretchedness and for many other reasons, so that it seems to me to be exceedingly holy and to have done me much good. For this reason, it seems to me that he can in no sense be evil. And if he is good, and if in addition he does me so much good with his pleasant stories, then I do not understand why you instruct me to press him down and away far beneath the cloud of forgetting. A very important question. The mind gets attracted to stories, and the stories about God are told so that the mind gets attracted to God. But because of our attachment to world, we drop the God. The idea is to drop the story and hold on to God. But what happens is we drop the God and hold on to the story. It is like in a very beautiful box, a diamond is given to somebody, but the box was so beautiful and so that person just held on to the box, and inside what is this stone, threw away. So it is the precious thing is thrown away. It is the beautiful stories, and the mind gets occupied in the stories and the principle is lost. The story is for conveyance of the principle. The pot, you are given say a cup to drink some coffee. Now if you keep only admiring the cup and threw away the coffee, then there is no point, you know. So similarly, it happens that the stories are good if you are getting attached to the content, the God, the stories about God. Now, our mind cheats us that, okay, yes, I am not reading or listening to any those frivolous novels. I am listening to the stories about God. I am watching this movie about God. And we don't know when the mind slips away from God and merges only in the story. The idea has to be reversed, that let the story be gone, and it is the God that is important. You are given a shot, you know, a medicine as injected into you, a needle goes into you. Now you tolerate the prick. Why? Because there is a medicine going into you, and so you know that it is going to cure you. But that prick, that shot cures, and if you put the needle without any medicine there, then is it going to be of any help? It is not. It is only you get the prick, that's all, and not the curative treatment. So similarly, the mind goes into stories, and it is worse because it is under the delusion. If you are, say, just seeing a humorous movie, come on, let us go and watch some humorous thing. So at least you are not under the delusion that you are doing anything religious. Now what happens here? You go under the delusion that no, I am doing something spiritual, something religious, actually indulging in just the pleasant worldly pursuit under the label that it is religious. That is why there is a more need of caution in this. That which is clearly evil, you will, a sincere spiritual aspirant is sure to avoid it, sure to steer clear of it. But if it comes in a changed garb, looks very nice, looks attractive, and you feel, it is helping me so much in spiritual life. Now, that fine deceptive lying enters there, and thus one may give up the spiritual aspect and hold on to only the attractive part of it, under the delusion that I am having the spiritual life. It is therefore this is given: beware of the good holy things also, that what you are taking from it, that is important. It is holy company of somebody. You go into the holy company that many devotees had gone to see the Belur Math. And then they afterwards, Belur Math, where all our headquarters was, and then is now also, lot of Swamis, many great disciples of Sri Ramakrishna were staying there at that time. So those devotees, they went there, and afterwards they came to Holy Mother, and Holy Mother asked, what did you see there? Oh, the cows were so wonderful there. And the Holy Mother, what did you say? Did you meet those Swamis? Did you listen to any, devotional or spiritual discussion there? Those people were again and again talking just of cows. That was there, but the cows were great, you know. So as if they had just... So what did they get? That was in that so-called holy company. So that is what happens, you see. One should be therefore, they are, but their use may be good or bad. That is important. Good only if it increases one's devotion. Bad if it draws us to self-pride, curiosity, literary cunning. We may unconsciously become proud scholars of devil, masters of vanity and falsehood. We become religious scholars, means scholars in religious studies. And that is it, you know, never practice religion, just have a lot of learning about what this Upanishad says and what that crowd of unknowing says. I have read 500,000 books. What does it matter? Pride. Pride of religious scholarship is one of the worst prides that obstructs a spiritual seeker. It is very important to note that the pride of religious scholarship is the worst obstacle. You can become a scholar and then nothing bad in that, very good. You have studied so many books, even nothing bad in that, very good, because it can help you. But the pride stealthily enters, you know, unconsciously. I seek, you know, I am Swami, I have studied so many things. So unconsciously the mind starts expecting honor. Mind starts feeling, I am such a wonderful, great person, and so forth. So, and that kills the devotion instantaneously. So that is why this warning is there. I can keep on telling how many lectures I gave on these abstruse ideas and so forth, and the audience was mesmerized by my orations. That is the most detrimental thing that can actually happen in the religious pursuits. So therefore he cautions about it. We shall continue to study. Any questions? Okay, then we shall conclude with the prayers. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu. Just a reminder, coming Sunday we shall be observing Guru Purnima, and from 11 o'clock in the morning till about 4 o'clock with different programs. So you can see the details and the flyer outside or inside too. So if possible, do try to come. Thank you.